Okay, we're back. Glad to see many of you survived Halloween. So what we've been talking about is driving and sketching Bode plots for different transfer functions for our converters in this small signal AC domain. I'm using the buck boost here as an example, but developing techniques general to any converter. Last class, we kind of went over how these different characteristics of single poles and single zeros are going to show up on a Bode plot, developed our kind of straight line approximation techniques that we use to plot any of these characteristics. Okay. Well, we went over some kind of techniques for now when I have multiple poles and zeros, how can I approximate that Bode plot using what I know about the individual poles and zeros. We have nice things like when I multiply two transfer functions together, the phases just add, the magnitudes multiply, but when we take the log of it and go into the dB domain, then the log of the magnitudes will add. The log of two things multiplied is the sum of their logs. Now, on our Bode plot, both the magnitudes and phases just add. So if I have two poles, I know what each pole looks like. I can just add up the magnitudes of each, add up the phases of each. And we did a couple examples of that. Prior to that, one thing I'm going to go back to use it as an example for graphical construction is this first kind of derivation we did of the magnitude for a single pole. So we looked at this RC circuit, and right away looking at it, we see it's an impedance divider, and the transfer function is 1 over SC over R plus 1 over SC. And then we went through, did derivation of what is the magnitude exactly, treating S as J omega and solving the magnitude of that, then plotted it here. We made this approximation that, okay, if omega is much greater than omega naught, what does this look like for much less than, and then took an exact value right at omega naught to fill in the area in between. Okay. So, plot this one more time just with some real numbers now. It's going to be a nominal change, but I'm going to make a couple comments as we do. So for R is 10 kilo ohms and C is 10 nanofarads, then my omega naught, my corner frequency, said was 1 over RC, and that's equal to 10 kiloradians per second. We're sticking angular, or not as omega naught over 2 pi, which is 1.6 kilohertz. So as I plot this, the same magnitude of G to 1 was a 1, 2. Didn't even write it. 2, 1. Versus, let's just leave it as omega. An angular frequency. I'm going to have this breakpoint at omega naught is equal to 10 kiloradians per second. And my magnitude, the way we derive this, said, okay, what we solved for here, magnitude of G to 1 equals the square root of 1 over 1 plus omega over omega naught squared. So our approximation to this expression, we said when omega is much less than omega naught, it's going to look like 0 dB flat. When omega is much greater than omega naught, it's going to look like just this omega naught over omega, minus 20 dB per decade, decreasing slope. And then in the middle, we filled in with an exact value. So what did that approximation actually do? Well, what we did is we looked at this denominator and we said, here I'm adding two things together. If this thing is a lot bigger than one, so then I'll just consider this. If one is a lot bigger than this thing, then I'll just consider the one. So what we really did for that approximation is we said, for this thing, this is approximately equal to just the max of 1 and omega over omega naught squared. Right? And if I didn't worry about this minus 3 dB right at the point and just took the straight line approximation, it'd be exactly this. Okay? I add two things together, just whichever one's bigger is going to dominate. Okay? That approximation neglects any kind of region where these two are comparable in value. It assumes that one's always much greater than the other. So it's not perfect, it's an approximation. But particularly when we start working on Bode plots, where we've got log scales, if I go, each division on this log scale is a factor of 10, then just a little distance away from this point, this corner frequency, one is really 10 times greater, 100 times greater than the other. So because we've crunched down this scale, made everything log scale, pretty much everywhere on a Bode plot, one of these is much greater than the other. Okay? That's what allowed us to get these two parts. That stays accurate until maybe a factor of 2 or some small range around omega naught, and then we know if I take the exact value, it should be 3 dB down at double omega naught and half omega naught at 1 dB down. But almost the entire Bode plot I can get just by this approximation. Okay. So highlighting that, what we're going to get into is graphical construction of Bode plots or impedances or transfer functions. So let's review a couple things that we've talked about now. On my magnitude Bode plot, we have just definition or identities of logs that if I take magnitude in dB of the product of two things that are transfer functions or impedances or otherwise some functions of S, then that was equal to the sum of the log scale, the dB magnitudes, right? 20 log of x times y is 20 log of x plus 20 log of y. Right? And then now, this approximation that we're applying says that if I take the magnitude of a g1 plus a g2, that's approximately just max of g1 and g2. This is an approximation, and it's accurate if magnitude of g1 is not approximately equal to g2. It's either much greater than or much less than. This would be very accurate. And if close, not so much. Okay. So between the two of these and their extension to division, so if I divide G1 by G2, subtract them, we can sketch out the majority of a Bode plot only knowing kind of the constituent parts of some function. Another way of looking at this, what's the approximation that we're really making? So this is somewhat equivalent to saying if I have two impedances in series, that's directly equal to some equivalent. And that ZEQ is approximately just the bigger of the two impedances in series. Whichever one's larger is going to dominate. Okay. You can do the same thing with impedances in parallel. That's some equivalent impedance. In this case, Q is approximately the minimum of Z1 and Z2. Okay, inherently true. If I put two things in parallel and one thing's very small, one thing's very large, overall the small thing is going to dominate. And also get this applying what we said here. So if I do more accurately, ZQ in this case is 1 over Z1 plus 1 over Z2. Applying the first one, this is going to be 0 dB minus 20 log of the denominator. And then the denominator will take the maximum because it's 1 over Z1 and 1 over Z2. We'll pick the opposite one. We'll pick the minimum, which will give us the maximum reciprocal, maximum conductance. Admittance. Okay, so what does that let us do? First, I just wanted to mention this. This will be posted to the website. Has everybody seen log paper before? It's useful for sketching your Bode plots. So log paper has a linear scale on the Y, so you can put your 0 dB, 20 dB, 40 dB. But on the X, for your frequency axis, it has a log scale. It's be whatever, 10 kilohertz, 100, 1K, 10K. So these major divisions are tens. And then in between, it'd be 20, 30, 40, 50. The distance between these X ticks scales logarithmically. Okay. So on 200, Okay. So if you haven't seen it, that'll be posted on the website for future homeworks. We'll require you to plot some Bode plots. It makes it a little easier on a log scale. The thing I want to get to is reactance paper. Have people seen this before? Okay. So this is just log paper from the previous slide, but I have plotted on top of that asymptotes for different inductors and capacitors and resistors. Okay. So any inductor is going to look like SL, 10 microhenry inductor. Impedance is going to increase 20 dB per decade with frequency. 10 microhenries sits here, 100 microhenries. L will be bigger, it's still SL. It's the slope, same thing as the 1 over SCs. Okay. What this lets you do is kind of sketch out quickly asymptotes for different transfer functions from the impedances involved. Okay. We have inductors going this way, capacitors that way, resistors are just horizontal lines, and then also just the dB values over on the left. So if I want to plot this same transfer function that I did here, so this RC circuit with R is 10 kilo ohms and C is 10 nanofarads. Yeah, I can go through all this stuff, derive the magnitude. I also, of course, probably can just plot this because I know what an RC looks like. So let's say I wanted to use this impedance paper. I can stop now at this first step. So I write that this transfer function is this impedance divider, 1 over SC over R plus 1 over SC. So my G21 is 1 over SC over R plus 1 over SC. R is 10 kilo ohms. C is 10 nanofarads. And now what I'm going to do is use these rules we just put on the previous slide to sketch what this transfer function is going to look like. So I'm going to do it in steps. My R is 10 kiloohms. So if I plot that, R looks like this line, 10 kiloohms. My C is 10 nanofarads, which is this line here. And then stepping through colors, R plus 1 over SC, the addition of two impedances. We said before on a log scale, everything's so compressed that when I add two things together, that's going to look just like the bigger one of the two of them. So I've got R and 1 over SC's magnitude. So R plus 1 over SC just going to look like at every frequency, which one's bigger. It's going to be this thing here. So over on the left, capacitor has a big impedance at low frequency. I pick it. Over on the right, the resistor has bigger impedance as the cap drops. So I get that shape. And now the overall thing, what do I have left? Dark red. 1 over SC over R plus 1 over SC. Now I'm doing a division, a magnitude, a log plot. Division looks like a subtraction. So I'm going to do the magnitude of 1 over SC minus the magnitude of that denominator, which is the green one. So if I subtract them, subtracting this green from this purple, so back here at low frequency, they overlap. So if I subtract them, I'm going to get 0. So 0 dB. So 0 dB up to this point. So they overlap there, so it's 0. After that point, I'm going to be subtracting from purple. I'll subtract now just the constant value. So it's going to start decreasing at the rate that purple is decreasing, which is this. 20 dB per decade. And that's the overall magnitude of G21. Okay. I don't have to do any algebra on it or know anything about solving the exact magnitude. This is, so now 0 dB and then a corner at 10 kiloradians per second. That's what we said it was. Okay. So you can do this for arbitrary complex things. What you lose with this pure graphical construction is what is the impedance in the vicinity of where these things are equal. But you can apply that just from your own knowledge. I know this is a single pole. For a single pole, I'll be 3 dB below. And you can apply those things somewhat after the fact. Anytime where you have a single pole and zero, you're going to be 3 dB on the interior of that curve. Okay. Questions on that? Okay. If not, move on. The thing we haven't addressed is resonant poles. We've looked at single poles, single zeros, but now we're going to look at resonant type behaviors. We'll move through this a little bit quickly, relying largely on slides from the book, and get to a point where, similar to all the poles and zeros, we just have kind of our approximation canonical that you use to work with these. Okay. So resonant poles are going to come up in most of the systems we're going to look at for converters, because we're going to have an inductor and a capacitor in any of our PWM converters. We're going to have some resonant type behaviors, whether resonating through an equivalent transformer in our small signal model, or the buck type where I'm directly at the output. But I have interactions between this inductor and capacitor. For this simple example circuit, I look at my transfer function, g of s is equal to v2 of s over v1 of s. It's going to look like r in parallel with 1 over sc, or sl plus r in parallel with 1 over sc. Again, just an impedance divider, now capacitor in parallel with resistor and inductor in series. If I do some algebra and simplify it, I can get it into this form, where it looks like the numerator just unity and the denominator some second order polynomial. Okay. Where the coefficients are functions of circuit parameters, but it generally takes this form, the general form for a second order polynomial. Okay. So what's going to happen with this? We are going to, whenever we run into this, manipulate it into a standard form. There's kind of two generally accepted standard forms. The one on the left uses this beta as the damping factor. The one on the right uses Q as a quality factor. We will generally use this one. And the reason is going to be that Q has a more direct interpretation for how it shows up on the Bode plot. Both of them have physical interpretations. So we can find all of these things by equating coefficients between this format and whatever we solve for our circuit. So in this case, A2, my coefficient of S squared is LC in this circuit. In this format, A2 is equal to 1 over omega naught squared. My A2 is LC, that means my omega naught is 1 over root LC. Okay, just matching coefficients of each term. Omega naught is going to be a corner frequency in our Bode plot. Going to be frequency around which this LC resonates. Zeta, that we are generally not going to use, called the damping factor, whereas Q is the quality factor. Both are, obviously, in some sense equivalent. 1 over Q is equal to 2 zeta. It's matching forms here. But we generally talk about Q. This is the quality factor. It's going to control what happens near this omega naught frequency, near the resonant frequency of this LC. And we're going to have complex roots. So generally, this is a second order polynomial. It's going to have two roots, two solutions to this polynomial is equal to zero. Those can be two complex roots or two real roots. Q is greater than 1/2. We're going to get two complex roots. Q is less than 1/2. We'll have two real roots. We'll look at that in a second. Okay. So this Q factor that is related to the damping factor, we can convert between the two. The measure of dissipation in whatever my resonant circuit is. Physical interpretation of this. The caveats of that, in general, if I have a pure LC ringing, Q will tell me how much energy is lost in one period of ringing versus the total amount of energy, the peak stored energy. What the caveat to that is this dissipated means energy that goes into some resistive element. And if I'm just allowing an L and a C to ring, that would tell me, okay, how lossy is this LC? In a converter, sometimes like in a buck, this resistance might be my load resistance, RL, in which case I may have a very low Q, which would tell me that there's a lot of energy dissipated per cycle, but actually all of that energy is going to the load. So that's not necessarily a bad thing. Okay. If it's going into RL, I'm dissipating a lot of energy there, that's bad. It's going to hurt my efficiency. But if it's all going into this resistor, it's all going to my load, things could still be 100% efficient. When our models dissipated or delivered to load, but somehow going onto a resistor. Q is going to be very simple to include in the Bode plot. It's just going to be the magnitude of the Bode plot at the resonant frequency. Okay. So generally, if we take this expression, again, S is equal to J omega, and solve the exact magnitude, we get something that looks like this. And again, we can approximate it. This denominator under the radical for frequencies much below F naught and frequencies much above, we're going to get is something that's 0 dB for small frequencies, and then minus 40 dB per decade at high frequencies, because there are two roots. This is representing a resonant double pole at F naught. Actually, I have two poles there. I drop down minus 20, minus 40 dB per decade. Okay. Again, this is my approximation for very low frequencies and very high frequencies. So it's okay out here. It's okay out here. But in this region, where omega is approximately equal to omega naught, very close to the resonant frequency, not very accurate. Here, we don't know exactly what's going to happen, but it's going to be dictated by Q. Okay. So I go and look at that, solve exact magnitude when omega is equal to omega naught. This is going to go to 1, 1 minus 1. This whole term goes away. This goes to 1. I have 1 over radical 1 over Q squared. The radical will undo the square on Q, and this just becomes magnitude of G is equal to Q. So right at the resonant frequency, my magnitude is Q. And similar to what we did with the single pole response, we now have kind of a high frequency asymptote, a low frequency asymptote, and a value right at my breakpoint. And then we sketch and connect them up to create our Bode plot. Okay. So low frequency here, high frequency minus 40, and then magnitude of exactly Q in dB on our log plot at the resonant frequency. Okay, so here are just some different magnitude and phase plots for varying Q. At the resonant frequency, this is right around here. Q goes to infinity, the magnitude right at this frequency becomes infinity dB, and this thing rings all the way up to infinity. That's an undamped system, an LC resonance with no parasitic resistance in it. This is a system that for any step response, for any perturbation to it, my response would be just a sustained ringing at F naught. Okay. Begin ringing out at this frequency. Q is a measure of energy dissipated per cycle. If Q goes to infinity, means there's no energy dissipated, it just keeps ringing. Okay. This, no real system would have. Everything's got at least a little bit of damping. But more realistically, a large Q may be some system that would have a response that looks like this. Ringing, it's very slowly decaying, but for any sort of transient condition, it's going to ring out for a long time. Okay. So that may be the behavior of our converter. We solve the transfer function from controlled output. It's likely to have some high Q resonance in it, particularly for light load cases. So that's no good. So we don't want that to happen. We don't want to see this kind of stuff on our output voltage, causing our output voltage to ring all over the place. goal of our control is going to be to control, to dampen this ringing, get a much more well-behaved response. Okay. As I go down closer to Q is equal to 1/2, I can get responses that look like this, maybe like a critically damped response, or I have some overshoot, then come back into regulation with no ringing. If I go very low Q, my response would just look real slow. Okay. As I have some transients to get from wherever the system was before to wherever the system was after, there'll be no ringing, no overshoot, but it'll just take a long time to get there. Okay. So for Q is 1/2 and greater, up here, these are complex poles. For Q is less than 1/2, this polynomial, the second order polynomial, has two real solutions and I can factor it out into two separate poles. This thing down here doesn't look so much like a resonant double pole at this frequency. It looks like one pole back here and another pole up here. This is two real poles. Okay. When I look at the phase response, hey, regardless, I have two poles. So for any of these cases, my phase is going to start at zero and it's going to end up at minus 180. Get 90 degrees of phase lag from each of the two poles. If Q is very large, this happens as a step. Right at the resonant frequency, my phase drops 180 degrees. As Q decreases, the range of frequency over which phase is decreasing expands. And for very low Q, it looks just like two separate poles. So I get 90 from this one and 90 from that one. It actually has well separated here. See the end of one before the other phase lag starts. Okay, so here's the takeaway, here's the approximation for how we're gonna deal with resonant pole pairs. So if Q is greater than 1/2 in this polynomial, and as we sketch it on the Bode plot, magnitude is going to look like these two asymptotes, 0 dB and minus 40 dB per decade, the breakpoint at F0, and then right at F0, Q amplitude. Okay. The phase, this one, unfortunately, we do kind of need a more complex expression, but we're going to have breakpoints of 10 to the plus or minus Q over 2 times F0. And it's going to drop by 180 degrees between those two breakpoints, being exactly minus 90 at F0. Okay. This is just an analytical approximation to this behavior. Okay. But this is what we'll use for very high Q. This thing becomes very large, becomes 10 to the 0 is 1, and both of these are at F0. Yeah.
And the expression of Q going dB?
No, that's Q, the linear Q, the value of it. Okay. Q is in dB only when we're plotting it on dB axes.
So Q is equal to like 1.
Q is equal to 1, then you put 1 here, this would be 0 dB. Okay. That covers the case where Q is greater than 1/2. Q is greater than 1/2 means this polynomial is going to have two complex poles. Q is less than 1/2, we're going to have real poles. That means I can take this expression, and when Q is less than 1/2, I can factor it into two distinct real poles. Okay. I can do this. I mean, I can solve things to put here, even if Q is greater than a half, but I'm going to end up with complex frequencies, right? My roots are going to be complex. It's only when Q is greater, or excuse me, Q is less than a half, that I have two real roots of this equation. Then it's useful to factor it out and consider this as two separate poles and treat them both as single poles as we did before. Okay, this implies that omega 1 and omega 2 are well separated. They're at widely different frequencies. So I have these two separate poles in my response. Okay, so what do we do? Rather than forcing a factorization of this every time, what we're going to do is approximate the location of those two poles. So what's going on here, I'm taking this expression and I'm solving for the roots of the denominator, setting S over omega naught squared plus S over Q omega naught plus 1 is equal to 0. Solve this thing for roots of S. I use the quadratic formula. So it's going to look like negative B plus or minus square root B squared minus 4AC all over 2A. Find my quadratic formula, do some manipulation, multiply through by omega naught squared, pull out a Q, and I get these as my two solutions. The minus and plus come from my plus or minus of root. And you can see for Q is less than a half. This 4Q squared is going to be something smaller than a quarter. And then what's under the radical is going to be positive. I'm going to get real roots. Q is greater than a half. This thing under the radical is going to be negative, and I'm going to get complex roots. Okay. So those are my two roots. These expressions are still quite unwieldy, so I'm going to approximate them. In order to approximate them, what I'm going to do is I'm going to assume not only is Q less than a half, but Q is much less than a half. So Q is very small. Q is very small. I can approximate this thing under the radical. I'm going to use a Taylor series expansion around zero. So the Taylor series of root 1 plus x around x is equal to 0, 1 plus x over 2. First order Taylor series expansion, root 1 plus x. I'm going to use that to help me approximate where these two poles are. Let's plug this in here. Omega 1. 2 omega naught over Q, 1 minus, and then for this root 1 minus 4Q squared, I'm going to use this expression. So my X is minus 4Q squared. So I can approximate this as 1 minus 4Q squared over 2. Oops, went lowercase. Okay, now if I do that, 1 minus 1 will cancel, negative signs will cancel. I'll get, let's write it out, omega naught over Q times now 4Q squared over 4, this 2 and this 2 in the denominator. So my 4s cancel, one of my Qs cancel and I get omega naught over Q. So my first root I can approximate as just resonant frequency over Q. Okay. Applying the same thing over here, omega 2, approximately omega naught over Q, 1 plus. Again, make this approximation. Then simplify this thing down, get is omega naught over Q times 2 over 2 minus 4Q squared over 4. Give me omega naught over Q minus Q omega naught. And now if I'm saying Q is very small, much less than a half, then if I take something and I divide it by Q, it gets bigger. If I take something and I multiply by Q, it gets smaller. So I can say this is approximately, screw that up, omega naught over Q. I messed up here. I apologize for that. Here, my squared canceled with this Q, 4 is canceled, and this should be omega naught times Q. My mistake. Okay, so these are our approximations now to what the two real roots are of this expression. 4q, much less than a half. In practice, we'll apply it, 4q is less than a half. Okay. Next two slides just go into a little more detail on that, actually plotting out this expression. Omega 1 is equal to this, valid. For q is less than a half, I have a real root. The expression f of q, which is the whole thing without the omega naught over q part, looks like this. This goes to approximately 1 for a large range of q. So really q is less than 0.3. Omega 1 is equal to approximately q omega naught. Same thing for omega 2. We just derived omega naught over q. Plotting to show exactly what that is. So here's the summary. Low Q approximation. So if Q is less than 1/2, then this pair of poles actually looks like two real poles. One of them at a frequency Q F naught, Q omega naught, the other at F naught over Q. And each of these will behave just like any other real pole. So for the phase, it'll be minus 45 degrees per decade, starting from a decade below to a decade above. I no longer have to think of this as a double pole. It's just two poles, single real poles. Okay. So this, before we go on, is what we do when Q is less than a half. Q is greater than a half, we use complex pole approximation. Okay. Questions on dealing with complex poles? And last thing for today, I'm going to cover briefly because this is really just a tool. The motivation for it is, well, here's an example of a circuit where if I want to solve the transfer function of this kind of LC network, I get something that's even hairier than what we've covered. We've talked about single poles and double poles, but now this is third order polynomial. And what do we do with something that has three roots, triple pole thing. May kind of look like some arbitrary example just to make it complicated, but this is actually a very common thing to do. This is an LC filter at the input of the converter, which might be used to, this is a buck type converter that has a switching input current to filter that out so that the input voltage won't see this high current ripple. And then these things are damping elements, which are put in there solely for the reason of reducing the Q of this network so it won't ring and have these bad ringing waveforms that we just talked about. So those don't come into play if I look at the Bode plot at any frequency other than right in the vicinity of the resonant frequency. Right at the resonant frequency, they just cap the magnitude, so it's well damped. So this is somewhat of an aside, but this is a real circuit. This is something we might use. And if I go and follow the transfer function, I get this thing, which is kind of a mess. Okay, so how do we deal with that? Well, the kind of systems we're going to work with in this class, we're really at most going to have a pair of complex poles. We're not going to have some third order root where all three of these poles are at the same frequency. So this is going to be able to be separated out into either three real poles or one real pole and a pair of complex poles. But we'd like to not have to try to factor this thing. If I try to factor it, okay, for some general polynomial coefficients, A1 to AN for the same degrees of F, I'd like to be able to factor that into, if possible, a bunch of real roots. Okay. And here I'm taking this from the book, section 8.18. They just use this kind of general expression, 1 plus tau on S for us. They'd be more concerned with things that look like 1 plus S over omega 1, where omega 1, 1 over tau 1. But these A's be something like all of these terms in terms of circuit parameters. We want to factor this out and find the roots. If possible, we'd like to find, okay, they're all real roots. Perhaps some of them are complex. So if I try to do this generally and exact, I can multiply out this thing here by just FOIL out all these terms. I'll end up with something where I have coefficients of each power of S. And I can set those equal to one another. I get some linear system of equations that looks like this. That is going to be an absolute pain to solve. Numerically, maybe no problem. But by hand, as functions of L and C, so that I can get equations for the roots where I know how they depend on different passives, just no hope. Okay. So we're going to try to approximate, see if we can get something useful out of this. So the approximation is going to hinge on this step. Let's start by assuming that all of my poles are well separated. They're all at different frequencies, and those frequencies are far apart. If that's true, then all of my time constants are well separated, the reciprocal of that. And then as I go through these terms, if tau 1 is much bigger than every other tau, then this thing is approximately tau 1. I just sum them all up, biggest one's going to dominate. And this thing is going to be approximately tau 1 times tau 2. A2 is the product of every pair of these time constants. So the biggest one is going to be the one that's the product of the two biggest things. A3, same thing. Tau 1, tau 2, tau 3. So on and so forth. As many degrees as you have in your polynomial. Okay. So I can make this approximation. If it's true, I can very quickly find what all these coefficients are, then invert them. So if these are all the A's, then these are all my tau's. All tau sub I is one over the frequency of the pole, and that's really what I'm interested in knowing. So as I go down, I'm a little bit over, but we've got a couple slides. Finish up real quick. This, taking my solutions for all of these, once I have my polynomial, my same inequality that all my taus are ordered and well separated in frequency, it looks like this in terms of the coefficients on the polynomial. So I've got this big expression here. I can look at the value of each of these coefficients, a1, a2, a3, line them up, and if all of these inequalities hold, then here's my factorization. Done. Okay. If one of them doesn't hold, not much greater than, maybe even less than when I line them up, that means that those two roots are not well separated. They're not at widely different frequencies. And then I have to treat those two adjacent roots as a resonant pole pair. Okay. So then it becomes something like this. And now as long as this inequality holds, that works. That's my factorization. Next slide, there's a caveat. If it's the very first one, it looks a little bit different, actually a little bit simpler. Now, my first pair of poles, it means my kind of low frequency stuff is a resonant pole pair. Okay, other cases, several of these, you can apply this recursively. If two different inequalities aren't satisfied, then those are both pole pairs. If two in a row aren't, if I make these two complex poles and then the inequality still doesn't hold with the next one, then you actually have third order or higher polynomials. That's not going to come up in any of the systems we're going to look at. Okay. Thanks for letting me go a little over. We'll pick up on Friday.